G'day. Michael Frangier is a linguist, currently employed as a teaching fellow at the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London, and part of his doctoral project was to document the language North Ambrim, spoken on the island of Ambrim in Vanuatu, which up until Mike went there was a purely oral tongue. But while he was recording and making an alphabet for that, for use in the local school system, as well as writing a grammar and producing a dictionary, he came across a communicative art form also practiced there, a form of sand drawing, which he's joined us from the studios of the BBC in London to tell about. Right, Mike?
Yeah, but I had actually heard about them before I went to Vanuatu because I had a colleague who had worked in Vanuatu before and said she had come across a few of these designs as well. And it's When you go to Vanuatu, it's quite widely known over there about sand drawing. It's quite a common thing. In order to go and work in Vanuatu, you go through the local cultural centre based in the capital city in Port Vila. And it's also a cultural centre and museum, and they have displays, and they have a man there who does lots of really nice sand drawings as well. So you can see them there as well. It just became sort of a part of my project when I came to North Ambrim, the language I was working on. I mean, I have to record examples of language from all these different sort of speech domains and genres in order to get a sort of wide understanding of the language and its use. And so sand drawing just became one small part of this.
Right, yeah. Well, I was bowled over to note that it's not Papua New Guinea nor the Amazonian basin of Brazil, but the Pacific Island archipelago of Vanuatu. That's the most linguistically diverse country in the world.
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Really?
Yep. Papua New Guinea has the most languages in the world, but the most dense per capita, language per capita, is in Vanuatu. It's because it has over 100 languages, maybe 130. Some are quite closely related, and it tends to be like a dialect chain, so one language would be related to the next. But then if you went one removed from that, it would be mutually unintelligible, so it would be like a very, very different language. And the fact that there's population is only about 250,000 people, giving an average of 2,500 people per language, makes it the most linguistically dense place in the world.
And presumably that came about because it is this string of islands. It's now a unified country, but well before then it would have been, yeah, just this bunch of people close by to each other geographically, yeah, but removed from each other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for example, Ambrim Island, where I work, has about 8 different languages. And it's, in the past, it would have been like a contiguous settlement area all along, say, the coast. But because there's this big volcano, highly active volcano in the middle, it can be quite impassable. And there's been eruptions in the past that have sort of destroyed this sort of settlement area and made it sort of unreachable. So in order to get from the north to the south, you have to do a day's trek over the volcano. It's quite an arduous walk. Even on Malekula Island, which is another neighbouring island, you have over 30 languages, and there's sort of dense jungle and lots of hills and mountains in the way. And I think people tend to be quite locally orientated as well.
And apart from all these spoken languages, this sand drawing, I'm wondering if that's shared across those oral language groups, or is it specific to one of them?
It's not specific to one of them, no. It's shared across central Vanuatu, so from the middle of the archipelago upwards, so from Epi Island, we have Epi, Ambrim, Palma, Malekula, the northern islands, Pentecost and the Banks Islands and Santo, and even into the southern tip of the Solomon Islands, which is the next country in the archipelago. They all use sand drawing they use it for different means, I suppose. So in one respect, it is a means of communication, and it can be used to sort of reinforce storytelling. So there'll be a design that represents actors or parts of a story. But they can just be art in itself. So children will draw pictures of fruit or canoes or fish or birds.
But are there different versions or codes or, you know, symbolic systems of these sand drawings expressed in the different islands, or is it pretty much, you know, one sort, a unified kind of sort?
There's quite a few different sorts, actually. I mean, the most prototypical type of design that you find is, well, people draw on the ground. They'll either normally put ash on the ground to sort of highlight the drawing itself, because it's volcanic ground, it's black ground, so you put ash on the ground so it sort of highlights what you're drawing. Because everybody cooks on a fire, so there's lots of ash around in the fire pit, and so they just scoop it out in a coconut shell and take it to the ground, and it sort of creates this sort of nice sort of drawing area, like a canvas, I suppose. And then they can draw in that, and so the black sand, the black ground underneath is revealed when you pull your finger across the ash. So when we talk about sand drawing, it doesn't necessarily have to be on the beach, although the beach is black as well. But the ground as well is this black, dark, earthy ground. And people tend to draw on the ground in the villages.
Right.
So, yeah, as I was saying, the most prototypical drawings are when a grid line is traced in the ground first. So like two or three vertical lines crossed with two or three horizontal lines. And then from there, these sort of geometrical curves are drawn through the grid lines, so from different points in like a spiral, or they sort of come back in on themselves, and they create these sort of really intricate geometric shapes. Those are the most prototypical. Some you don't even need a grid line, so people can just draw freely in the ground different sort of circular designs, sort of interweaving them. Others I've seen from Ambai Island are sort of, they would have draw a box, a square box or an oblong or a rectangle, and then they would draw these sort of straight lines inside them, sort of always at like a few sort of centimetres in between them, sort of going at the sort of same 45 degree angle and then going to the other side of the rectangle and then going back again. So it's sort of this sort of crisscross of all these sort of very angular lines. So you get these very different designs across the islands, but for the most part, the most prototypical are these sort of grid lines with these curved lines.
On top, yeah. So yeah. First there's this kind of template that's delineated on, you know, what's a kind of a canvas, which is the ground, and then once that template is there, then you can draw these curvy things using that sectional template as a guide.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. And the point is, well, it's said that the most beautiful or the best sand drawers are the ones who can, after you've drawn the grid lines, the template, you start and you do not leave your finger from the ground. And then you'd end up at the same part where you started, and then you're not meant to sort of retrace over any of the lines you've created before.
Right, so it sounds then as though a part of the beauty is that smooth line.
Yes, and the sand drawing masters are supposed to remember these really, really intricate designs, and part of it is the performance of the drawing itself, to remember without hesitating the exact path which your finger should take, and to go through all these grid lines. I mean, some are really, really complicated. But the young kids nowadays, they only sort of learn the really simple designs of birds and trees, not the more intricate designs which have these sort of stories associated with them.
So tell a bit more about what is communicated traditionally in these sand drawings, and so what the point of them is. Is it meant to be a decoration of a story? Is it meant to be an aide de mémoire, like to help to remember the story or elements of it? Or, you know, what's it for?
Yeah, there are actually some drawings that are used specifically for communication itself. So there's a drawing that I've seen that's used as a farewell message. So once you've been to see somebody, you draw this drawing on the ground to say thanks for letting me see you and to say farewell. There's ones for welcoming people into the village, so you draw a specific design said to represent the something called lap lap, which in Vanuatu is sort of their national dish, which is grated yams or bananas and mixed together with coconut milk, put in these big leaves and baked on a fire in a ground oven for a few hours. And this drawing is just sort of like a little cross in the middle and then some spiral designs emanating out from it, like a rippling effect. And that's sort of a welcoming sign that you draw when somebody visits you in your village. Mm. There's also other designs as well I've seen from Malekula, which old anthropologist called Deacon had recorded back in the 1920s. And it's this sort of star-shaped design with, again, this sort of rippling effect where you have five points to the star, each like slightly larger than the other one. And that represents, so if you've come to see somebody and they're not there, maybe they're in their garden of an hour's walk away and you wanted to see them. So you draw this design on the ground and the five points of this star would show that you're going to come back in 5 days' time to see them again, or that you're going to come back in 5 days' time and do something specific and, you know, we'll go off and hunt or something like that. So these are the real sort of communicative aspects of it, which are, you know, messages for people. But I think also from another point in linguistics, we talk also a lot about modality, the different modes of speaking and language use. For instance, gesture is one different mode how we get across something we're trying to say while we're talking. You know, facial movement as well, raising of eyebrows, sign language itself as well. Now, in Vanuatu, we also have this high concentration of languages, and it's not hard to see that perhaps the art of drawing these sort of messages and parts of the story helped and aided communication between people, especially when we look at the fact that these stories are, again, found in different linguistic areas, different language groups within Vanuatu, and it's also the same design. So it's not hard to see that these designs were perhaps, when one person came to a different village to trade, that they'd sit down and tell stories. You know, you could slightly maybe understand the language that was being spoken to because they can be fairly similar. Maybe you'd pick up words, but you'd draw the design in the ground and people would maybe recognise the drawing and know the story as well from that.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, it sort of aids communication in that respect.
Yeah, yeah. Culturally too.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, a lot of the drawings represent cultural history. There's also designs from Malekula, which have to be learnt by everybody in order to ensure that your spirit after death goes to the land of the dead. So it's quite a simple design actually. But once you die, your spirit goes on the path to the land of the dead, but it's blocked by this guardian spirit called Temes Sapsap, and she draws part of the drawing on the ground, and your spirit is meant to go along and complete the drawing. And if you don't know the drawing and you can't complete it, she will swallow your spirit up and you devour you basically, and you will never get to go to, yeah, well, heaven, I suppose, if we talk about it like that. But if you do complete the design, you get to go to the land of the dead and your spirit is happy. So these drawings definitely have really, really high cultural value as well.
Yeah. Joining us here for Lingua Franca from the studios of the BBC in London, the linguist Michael Frangia. And for a squeeze at some Vanuatu sand drawings, as well as to link to some of the cultural stories that they tell, check the webpage for today's programme, why don't you? And while you're there, drop me a line. Go on. While you still can, and have a think about contributing to the Everybody Story feature on your experience of language. I'm Maria Zylstra. Ciao, ciao.
On RN, we're always celebrating Australian music, but in November, join us for Australian Music Month. Live sets, profiles and exclusive sessions will be featured across RN's music programs.
And if you missed our Midnight Oil special, you can still experience the Rare Oils concert online, along with a free download of their music and a poster.
For details of RN's Oz Music Month, go to Plan Your Listening on the RN homepage.